The following podcast contains adult language and themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello there, and welcome to another bonus episode of Season 2 of the Going There podcast. We have a really special show today for multiple reasons. First and foremost, I talk a lot about religion on this show. And because we talk about the human connection and experience and trauma, we unfortunately have to unpack a lot of the negativity of it. And what's really awesome is today we get to unpack and look at the positive side of spirituality, of faith, and a connection with God. And to help us do it, we have a world-renowned author of over 40 books who has been on the New York Times bestseller list, somebody who is such an inspiration and such a cool guy. Believe me, this episode is going to have you thinking, processing, and hopefully taking some positive actions towards, I don't know, your connection with something bigger than just you and the tangible things in your world. I'm your host, Matt. We're going to go there and see what God has to say about it.
Get ready to open your heart and your mind, because we're going there. Taboo topics are back on the table.
You hear me?
Yes, I do.
Perfection.
I wouldn't call it perfection. It only took you 14 minutes to make it work, but...
You know, it took God 7 days. I'm just kidding.
Good answer. Great answer, Matt.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me just great, great pleasure to introduce today's guest, a multi-New York Best Time-selling author, Mr. Neil Donald Walsh. Thank you for being with us today, Neil.
Well, it's nice to be with you, Matt. Thank you for the opportunity and for the invitation. How may I serve the moment?
First of all, you've been serving the moment long before you realized, because you and your work and your thoughts and ideas were brought into my life at a time where I needed them the most. And I've never felt so much of a connection and understanding with another human who I've never met in my entire life, who I didn't even know existed. And it's not to get overly woo-woo with you already, but today we're going to talk about your new book, God Talk, which just finished reading, which was, we'll get into how amazing it was to experience that book and in real time to be going through some of the experiences and emotions of yourself and some of the people who wrote some letters and essays and stories that went into the book. But before we get into the book, let's talk about who Neil is. So what is your background? Tell our audience a little bit about you.
Well, Matt, you know, first of all, I'm an old person now. I turned 80 years old a few months ago. So, but in my 80 years, I've done everything I ever really wanted to do. I mean that sincerely. I when I was a young man, I wanted to be a radio broadcaster. And by golly, at the age of 19, and from 19 until about 29, for 10 years, I made a living as a broadcaster on the air. Wound up with a nationally syndicated radio talk show. I also loved to be a writer, and I thought if I had a second, a career that I would love to do, it would be in the newspaper business. Well, by gosh and by golly, I applied for a job at a local newspaper, and I got a job as a cub reporter, because, you know, they weren't going to give me a major beat, but they could see that I could write well, because they gave me a test, and I wrote, and so I got to be a cub reporter. I wound up being the managing editor of that newspaper.
Wow.
A few years later. And then I've done other things that I've always wanted to do in my life, Matt. I always wanted to be a conductor of an orchestra. I wound up conducting a 65-piece orchestra for a major musical production of Camelot, because I was not hired as a conductor. I was the director of the show. I did a great deal of theater in my life, a lot of theater as a director and as an actor. But I got to conduct the show because the guy who was hired as the conductor became ill the night, would you believe it, of the performance. And we had no one to step in. So I just stepped in, picked up the baton, and pretended that I knew what I was doing. And since I knew the music backward and forward, I was able to conduct that 65-piece orchestra. I made a living as a photographer in my life, Matt. I wound up, you know, as a portrait photographer and worked with many, many people taking pictures of them. I called them environmental portraiture. I would go to a person's boat, you know, or to maybe to their back room or to their game room or wherever they wanted me to take a picture of them. And I did environmental portraiture and made a good living at it. Sold the portraits to spouses or family or friends. And so, you know, and the list goes on. I'm not bragging because you asked me. So I spent my years, you know, from the age of 19 to around 49, doing all the things I wanted to do. But now here's what's interesting. Matt, I was not happy. I mean, as a person, I simply could not find happiness. I found, you know, occupational satisfaction, fair enough. But I couldn't say that I was a gloriously happy person. And then things began to fall apart in my life. I lost my relationship. I lost my job in 5 days later and 5 days after that. Now, this is in the same 10-day period. I'm involved in a major automobile accident. An older gentleman turned into my car, made a left turn in front of me. And we had not a fender bender, but a major, major automobile accident. My car was totaled and I wound up with a broken neck. And it was not a hairline fracture. I remember the wording vividly on the report. It was a 3/4-inch avulsion fracture of the 7 cervical vertebrae posteriorly. Matt, that's a break in your neck big enough to put a pencil through.
Ouch.
Yeah. And the doctor said to me when I woke up from the anesthesia, "You know, Mr. Walsh, you're a miracle, because I've been doing this work for many years, and most people who suffer that large of a fracture in their neck don't live to tell about it, because of spinal cord complications. I mean, you're injuring the major artery in your, you know, the through line that where the artery goes through that controls the rest of your body." And he said, "But you managed to live through it." And the few who do survive such an accident inevitably at least wind up paralyzed from the neck down. You suffered neither consequence. You're a walking miracle. And he wasn't kidding around with me. And he leaned over the table that I was lying on and he said, "So what do you intend to do with the rest of your life?" And he was dead serious, to use a badly formed phrase, because he really, really, really wanted me to understand that I had escaped every possible negative outcome of a horrible accident. But that didn't change the fact that I had lost my relationship, that I had lost my job, and that I was out of work. So I'm living in a little apartment. My wife and I did not have a bitter. We did not have a bitter departure. It was an agreeable. We just agreed it wasn't working. But I was living in this little apartment. I had no money. I was running out of savings, and ultimately I couldn't pay the rent. So he evicted me. He said, "I'm sorry. I got to ask you to leave. I got to make some rent here." It was a garage top apartment in somebody's backyard, and so I had to leave the apartment. Now I'm living on the sidewalk. And the reason I couldn't get a job anywhere to replace the job I lost is, Matt, I'm wearing a Philadelphia collar. It's a plastic device that they put around your neck because you can't hold your head up. He said your neck cannot support your head. It's like a picture a bowling pin on the head of a pin, or a bowling ball on the head of a pin. You can't do it. So he said, you know, You must wear this collar, this plastic device around your neck for the next year and a half or so until your neck fuses and you can then support your head again. Now, no one's going to hire me. Finally, the 7th interview, the guy was honest. He said, "Mr. Walsh, you've got all the qualifications. We'd hire you in a minute, but we can't hire you with that therapeutic device around your collar. You know, we're all very clear that one wrong move on the job, we're paying your medical bills for the next 25 years. We can't afford to hire you. You come back in here when you're totally healed, and we hire you in a minute." So now I'm out of work, out of money, and out of time to pay my rent. I wound up living on the sidewalk. I'm thrown outside. I lived on the street, not for a couple of bad days or a couple of bad months, but for a year of my life. 1 year living on the sidewalk, sleeping on the concrete, going from person to person, asking for a handout, and really experiencing the ultimate human indignity. No place to go to the bathroom. I had to sneak into McDonald's and hope the manager wouldn't throw me out just to use the restroom. And the manager one day caught me. He could see, of course, I didn't smell very good. I hadn't had a shower in weeks. My hair was drawn down to the middle of my back. My clothes were rumpled. And it was clear to him that I was a street person. He walked up to me and he said, "No, come on, no, come on. No, no, no. I can't have you in here. You're just going to panhandle the rest of the customers." I said, "No, I promise I won't." And now I'm begging the guy, talking to him brother to brother. I said, "Please, please, I just need to use the bathroom. I got no place to use the toilet. Please." The guy had, he had a big enough heart. He looked at me and he said, "All right, in and out. You got it?" I said, I said, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir."
Now you realize that you've lost every shred of human dignity when you've got to beg someone to use the bathroom.
So that was my life at that point. And then finally, I got a little weekend job as a weekend fill-in for somebody who had a full-time job and didn't want to work weekends. I got a weekend job, which was better than nothing, enough to pay for a tiny little one-room apartment again. I got into that place, and then I woke up at 4:30 in the morning. Sorry to go on and on like this, but you asked a question about my life. You want my background. That's my background.
And I know who I asked the question to.
Yeah,
a man who is not at a loss for words, so do not apologize.
So, well, thank you. So I wind up in this little apartment now again. Finally, at least I'm out of the weather, and at least I have my own bathroom. But I wake up at 4:30 in the morning one day, and I'm screaming in my mind to God, really, what does it take to make life work? Come on, what do you want from me? Am I such a horrible person that I've done such horrible things that I deserve endless, endless struggle in my life, one day after the next? So I picked up that yellow legal pad on the coffee table in front of the used couch that I had thrown in there, and I write an angry letter to God. Really, I don't even know what I thought I was doing. I was just writing out my thoughts just to get, just to get the anger out. Yeah. So I'm writing down, "Tell me the rules." I remember this. I recall this moment vividly. "Tell me the rules. I'll play. Just give me the rules."
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how life worked. I didn't know what the rules were. And then I heard a voice inside my mind. I thought for a moment that there was somebody actually in the room. Turned around, of course, there's nobody there. And my first thought is, oh, great. Now, on top of everything else, I'm losing my mind.
Right. Which it's easy to believe that, right?
Yeah, because the voice was very, very real. But I heard it in my mind. And this voice said to me, "Neil, sweetheart, do you really want answers to all of these questions? Or are you just venting?" And I'm thinking, you think? Yeah, I'm venting a little, but if you've got answers, I sure as hell like to know what they are. I don't even know who I'm writing to, but I'm just responding to what I'm hearing. And the voice said, "You know what, Neil, you are sure as hell about a lot of things, but wouldn't it be nice for you to be sure as heaven?"
Yep.
Now I'm writing, okay, what's that supposed to mean? And before I know it, I catch myself involved in an on-paper dialogue, question-answer, 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 which I ultimately called a conversation with God because of the quality of the answers that I was receiving to the questions that I was asking. And man, I asked questions about every aspect of life, not just how to make life work, but ultimately parenting, right livelihood, relationships, sexuality, health, diet, exercise. I asked questions about everything. Because, I thought, well, if I've got the big guy on the line, I might as well get the information straight from I hate to put it this way, but straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
So, tell me what I need to know about life. And so I'm getting all this information. And then this story is almost coming to an end. But then God said to me, about one third of the way through what became the dialogue of book one, she said, "Neil, you will make of this one day a book. And it will be accessed by many people." And I thought, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Now I knew I was really imagining it. I'm making it all up, of course,
right?
Because nobody's going to publish a book by a guy who claims to be talking to God. But you know what? I sent it off to a handful, not like 30 or 40, but 3 or 4 publishers, just to see what would happen. my handwritten notes. I had them typed up into a little manuscript and I sent them off to a couple of publishers. By golly, if I didn't get a call 2 weeks later from a publisher, small publisher, and it wasn't a major publishing house like Random House or, you know, but a small publishing house on the East Coast of the US. And this guy says, "We want to publish your book. It's a great piece of fiction." No, he really thought it was a fictional book that about a guy who claims, you know, to be talking to God. But I
oh
said,
my
"No,
God.
no, 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 no." I said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! This is not a book of fiction. You're not publishing it as a book of fiction."
Wow.
He said, "Are you telling me this really happened to you?" I said, "That's what I'm telling you." He said, "Well, you know, we can't publish it as a nonfiction book with that title, Conversations with God. Nobody's going to believe it. Nobody's going to." I said, "Then don't publish it." He said, well, don't get so rash. We'll put it out. We may not sell as many copies as we as hope, but you know, we'll sell a few copies." And you know what? He was right. It did. I thought it wasn't going to sell 500 copies, and it didn't. Sold 5 million. Not bragging, just say it. So that's the answer to the story. Tell me about your life. And then to make matters turn from wonderful to worse, here I am on the program with you.
I don't know who, if you're dissing yourself or me, but I enjoy
the
humor.
Just a bit of humor, just a bit of humor, Matt.
No, the humor is important. As we segue through conversations with God and into God talk here, I have a, you know, over the last, you know, during COVID and everything with all the divisiveness in our country, I feel like I've become better friends with people who are from different walks of life than me. I think a lot of people will look at me and make assumptions. Oh, he must be very X, Y, or Z. But I'm blessed to have friends who are from different religions and sexual orientations, and especially a lot of friends in the Black community. And one of my friends, not long ago, before I had read this book, I said, you know, God actually answered a prayer of mine, which I hadn't prayed, like actually prayed to God in a long time. And she said, oh, what did you do? What was different? Why did it work? And I said, oh, well, I reached out and I said, listen here, you son of a bitch. And I went on and on about how I was cussing and ranting and raving. And she said, man, the way white people get away talking to their parents is crazy to me. Conversations with God is so human in the way that you talk to God and you ask questions that I almost felt like you were speaking for me in some cases. You know, you're like, wait a second. I thought I'm doing all these things right. Like you're talking about all of these pieces of career you had. It's not that they were meaningless. Like those are awesome stories, but you still felt this void. And I felt that way so many times through my life. Just when I think I'm at the pinnacle of figuring it out and being where I want to be, do I realize how empty I am? And so you're begging these questions to God, who, by the way, if you listen to the audiobook, Ed Asner speaking to me as God, that in and of itself was an incredible experience because, you know, I just hear like Mary, you know, I'm watching the Mary Tyler Moore show. But it just, man, did it speak to me on something that is so funny because, of course, somebody on the outside might go, that's fiction, because there are times where we feel so devoid of God and connection to humanity and the universe. And then you hear somebody having a conversation and you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot I can call up my old friend and talk about this stuff and ask questions and try to get answers to. It's a weird dichotomy of that spiritual and just so human. And that's why I think it sold how many million copies. It's because it is something I think all of us feel, whether or not we're willing to admit it. And I felt like you were speaking for me with these questions.
Well, you're right in that sense, Matt, because I was told by the publishers when I asked them, you know, explain to me how did this turn into an international bestseller? It's been translated into 37 languages. Again, not bragging, just saying. And so the guy tells me, the publisher says, it's because you asked the kinds of questions that everybody asks, and you got answers that people can really embrace, that they could accept those answers. They found the answers reasonable and acceptable, and in some cases surprisingly insightful. So that's what made the book take off the way it did. And by the way, it wasn't just Ed Asner, just so our listeners and viewers understand. It wasn't just Ed Asner who read The Voice of God. I insisted that The Voice of God be read by a man and by a woman. So The Voice of God is read by Ed Asner and Ellen Burstyn, the actress,
yeah,
alternating with each other line, because I didn't want people to think that I was making a statement that God was a booming male voice and that God, you know, was a male entity. I wanted people to understand, when I had Ellen Burstyn reading many of the passages in the book, that God also was a female, that we cannot decide that God is a certain race, a certain gender. Although we do know in the United States that God is a Republican, it couldn't be a Democrat. But other than that,
actually, before I read the books, a podcast, and you're in this podcast having this conversation, and it wasn't even on video, and I can't tell you how much I needed to hear this episode. When I was having a really bad day right around the holidays, feeling isolated, feeling devoid of some kind of connection.
You mean just last year, just a few weeks ago?
I'm talking like Thanksgiving-ish, yes. Like,
okay,
just this last year. Yeah, just a couple months ago. The conclusions that you came to, which, of course, the logical ones, we can say, yeah, it's rational to come to some of these. But some of the very in-depth and very specific conclusions were things that I also came to. And it tells me that this isn't just Neil coming up with things. Like, you know, I have a hard time with discernment sometimes. Is that my head? Is that my brain? Is that a bad piece of meat that I ate last night that I'm not digesting correctly? Like, or is it actually God? And some of the things that God says to you, I've heard God say to me in the past, and it validated that I need to be more open to some of these things.
Well, the major point of conversations with God, surely you know as you've read the books, is that God is talking to all of us all the time. That's the first major assertion in conversations with God. The question is not to whom is God talking. The question is, who's listening?
Yep.
Now, what happens is that even though all of us are experiencing conversations with God, or if you please, interventions and messages from the divine, most people are calling it something else because we don't want to be, you know, ridiculed or marginalized,
yep,
or people think that we're, you know, we've lost our mind. So we call it, a sudden insight, or it was an epiphany, or women's intuition. You know, or, you know, a coincidence, serendipity. We find all kinds of ways to describe these messages that we receive about life through the process of life itself. So it could be, you know, the chance utterance of a friend you just happen to run into on the sidewalk, or a conversation you overhear in the coffee shop from the next table, or the words on the billboard as you turn the corner on the next highway, and the words are just speaking directly to you. And you think, now, wait a minute, how is that possible? How could I have received a message so directly related to what I'm thinking about right now? So I'm not surprised, Matt, at all to hear you tell me of your experience, because it's the experience that is had by everyone. The only difference between you and most people is you've called it what it is. You've said, yeah, God's talking directly to me. And so congratulations for having identified it and for declaring it in such an accurate way.
And I owe you some thanks to be able to do that. And
well, money as well. You could send me money if you want.
I'm
willing to
make
accept.
The checks payable to Neil Donald Walsh, care of me. Okay. But
oh boy, intermediary.
What I want to say was, and I can only speak for myself. So, and I'm sure you
That's
come.
True.
I'm sure you come along through life to people who have reconstructed their. Theological ideology, spirituality, whatever you want to label it as. And actually, I think one of the things that hinders the ability to call it God is this idea and notion of what's been pounded into our head through dogma of who God is. Like you said, you broke some of the barriers by having a male and a female God speaking non-gendered throughout the entire book, or specific gender back and forth. But that Republican God that And you talk about this, that vengeful God, that God whose love you have to earn, that I think has been the biggest barrier for me to say, no, that's God I'm talking to. I'd have to label it as anything but God to feel like I wasn't moving backwards in who I am as a person. And I have to imagine I'm not the only person who's had that kind of barricade in the way, which you actually helped me move out of the way a lot.
I'm so glad. And that's why I wrote a book called The God Solution.
Yeah.
Because I've been saying that the solution to humanity's problems is to redefine God, to just decide. Because it really bothered me after all these years. I thought, is it not possible for all the world's religions to at least agree on a single sentence that they could all agree to? Or must we be differing with each other and in conflict with each other over everything, including God? Which is why there are 4,223 religions on the face of the earth right now, not from the beginning of time, but in this moment, over 4,000 religions being practiced on the face of the earth. So I wrote a book called The God Solution, which suggests that our solution to our individual and our collective problems on this planet is to redefine God using two words. In a statement that all the world's religions could agree on, here's the statement: God is pure love. Now, Matt, when I make that comment in front of an audience, and I've been sharing this in lectures around the place, someone inevitably in the back of the room gets up and says, oh, Neil, come on. Your big revelation is that God is love. Even religions that have differences of dogma agree that God is love. That's what you came here to tell us. And I have to say, whoa, relax. I that's not what I said. I said that God is pure love. Now my friend in the back of the room will say, okay, what's the difference? Smarty pants.
Here, I'll play the guy. Does that work?
Yeah, that works. What's the difference? And I have to tell them the difference is that pure love expects, requires, and demands nothing in return. Matt, we can't even love the person on the pillow next to us that way. Much less can we imagine a God who loves us that way. But we realize we've come to a place of new levels of mastery in life where we can turn to the person on the pillow next to us and to say, I love you, without needing, expecting, requiring, or even hoping for anything in return. Because our culture has imagined that love is transactional.
Yeah.
I love you if you love me. You know, like nations have trade deals with other nations, so we think that we should have trade deals with other people. And we think that God has a trade deal with us. God says, yeah, I love you, fair enough, but only if you obey my commands, do as I tell you to do, worship me endlessly, and, you know, and pay attention to what it is that I'm demanding from you. But if you meet my demands and don't break any of my rules, then I will love you. What kind of a love is that? So we find it to be actually theologically revolutionary to imagine a God who loves us without condition, and to imagine that there's no such place as hell. There's no such thing as eternal damnation, and God would never condemn anyone for anything any more than you would condemn a 16-month-old child. God will not even forgive us. You know, one of the statements I'm making when I'm invited to talk at churches, and some churches have been brave enough to invite me to come in and give a little talk. And I say from the pulpit, I'm glad you guys are here today. I've come here to share with you a message, an important message. God will never forgive you for anything. And the place goes crazy. People in the pews don't know what to do with that information. And some of them actually get up and start walking out. I say, wait, give me five more minutes and I'll explain to you that the reason that God does not forgive you for anything is that you cannot hurt, injure, damage, or harm God, or anger God in any way. So God doesn't need you to forgive you for something because God needs nothing from you to begin with, any more than you need to forgive a 2-year-old child for spilling the milk at the table. You know, if the 2-year-old child spills the milk at the table, Grandpa doesn't say, it's okay, sweetheart, I forgive you. Because Grandpa knows forgiveness is not part of the equation. In fact, not only does Grandpa not forgive the child, Grandpa actually comforts the child in the moment of her dismay, even as God comforts us in the moment of our dismay. I could, of course, be wrong about all of this.
I don't get the sense that you are, and the reason, and you touch on this in I think probably most of your books, is I can think back long enough ago before religion, and we're separating religion from like pure experience God for the semantics sake.
For actual sake.
Good. Well, see, I don't have to make that clarification with you. You're right. For actual sake, I can remember experiencing and feeling God, and it was pure love. And it, we unlearn it through learning the dogma and all of these things about fear and shame and guilt. And even though what you are proposing is so radical in a sense, it is so natural. It's almost crazy how much we've forgotten how simple it really can be.
Yes, it can be really simple, but at least you understand the basic tenets of what it means to be loving toward another person.
Absolutely.
And when we get to the point, I suffer the same, you know, small day-to-day failures as well. I can't love other people the way God loves me, but at least I know what I'm attempting to do, which is better than I could say in my 20s, 30s, or 40s. Honestly, yeah. I went through the first 30 years of my adult life having no idea. I thought love was transactional. I thought, you know, I love you if, you know, I'll give you all that I have to offer to you, but you have to give me all you have to offer to me. And the day that you stop giving me what you have to offer me, the deal is off. The game is over. I'm done loving you.
Why would you think any differently? That has been what the world's taught us that love is, right?
That's precisely right.
Yeah.
So when I finally got the message from God that the true nature of love is that love is not transactional. The joy of love is the experience of expressing it fully, completely, and without requirements of any kind. That's the joy. And when we experience love in that way, even if we only experience it once in our life, we never want to experience it any other way ever again, because we finally wake up and go, oh, I get it. That's what's written about. And how to do that, how to get from here to there, is in the God Solution. By the way, in the book that I wrote called The God Solution, and anyone who wants a copy of that book, I will send you to your computer. I will upload a author's manuscript of the book at no cost. All you have to do is send an email to neil@neildonaldwalsh.com and say, Neil, send me a copy. Upload me a free copy of The God Solution, because I want everyone to read that manuscript. So the publisher of the book, you know, is not really excited about me doing that.
What?
They'd like to sell a few copies. But I give them away at no cost to anybody who asks for it. Just send me a note to my email address, and Matt will put that address in his after show notes.
As well as you can see it right on the screen right now. And that's a great segue into God Talk. So Conversations with God, God Talk is a beautiful continuation of it. And as you're talking about allowing other people, that we all have the opportunity and the ability to convene with God, you share stories that were shared with you from other people, and how I'm assuming they used, some of them had to have been people who read Conversations or some of your other texts, because they're very symbiotic in the way that you weave a narrative, but also show these other experiences people had.
Yes. And that was the idea of the publisher, actually. It wasn't even my idea. The publishers said, we have an idea. We're going to put an invitation on the internet inviting people who feel that they've had a divine intervention, a moment when God spoke to them in some way or another, to tell us their story. And they told me that hundreds of people wrote to them, and they picked out, you know, some seven or eight of the little stories that they felt were the most interesting. A scientist whose conversation produced an experience of the presence of God in his life, a teacher who was told how to better relate to people, young people in her classroom, and so forth. So, yeah, so that we agreed to put six or seven of those stories in the book to make the point that God is not talking, it's not just about this guy, Neil Donald Walsh. God is talking to all of us all the time. As I said a minute ago, we're simply calling it something else.
I want people to go out and buy your book. So I don't want to give the whole, farm away here, but is there one story that speaks to you specifically that you want to share, even high level?
Well, I think it's a single mom who heard from her child, her 7 or 6 year old child. She was just facing a problem in her life, and obviously the 7 year old child became aware of it after a while. Mom's mood wasn't the same. Mom was talking in a funny way. Finally, she found mom crying about the problem they were facing, and this little 7 year old girl said to her mom, "Well, mommy, why don't you call?" This doesn't matter what name it was, but it was a person that she named who happened to be a spiritual counselor that she knew that her mother had used years ago, and she re somehow or another remembered that person's name. And the mom went, "I, of course, of course." And she got the inspiration from her 7-year-old daughter. Now, who was speaking through that 7-year-old? Was this just the daughter's mind, or was there something larger? Is there more going on here than meets the eye that caused the 7-year-old child to name the exact person that her mom needed to talk to in that moment? So, there's an old saying. Bill put it perfectly. I thought Bill was really accurate when he wrote in one of his plays, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy."
I believe you quoted that in this book. Am I not wrong?
It's possible, because I quote it everywhere I go. I also love what else Bill told us that the central point of life is to be or not to be. That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to rise up against a sea of troubles, and by opposing to end them, to die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. Bill had his finger on a lot. He was one of the world's great metaphysicians.
Along with sending you a free PDF of his book, he'll show up at your parties and do one-man monologues.
Well, one-man monologues are monologues. If they were more than one man, they'd be dialogues.
Now you're getting too smart for me. Here's what's interesting. While, of course, there's dogma and there's religion, there's theology, there's bloviations and pontifications of bad leaders. What's funny that I've learned in my own life about God is you could describe almost the exact same thing. If I was trying to describe to you a duck and I say it has feathers, it has a bill, it has webbed feet, it can swim on water, it can fly, it can do all these things, we're in agreement all the way up until the very bitter end when I say, but it's not called a duck, it's called this. And
If you
suddenly,
did that, I would probably say, "What the duck are you talking
yeah.
about?"
Duck you, right? Duck you. And yet, not only do we now disagree, we hate each other, and we might try to kill each other.
Yeah, honestly.
And that is the crazy part about God, is because, as you said, so many religions will nail it down to, and what is missing, and it's so simple and yet so beautiful, is the pure part of the love. The pure part means it doesn't matter if the toes are webbed or not. This is a duck. God is God. God is a salami sandwich.
Yeah, I see you have read my books thoroughly.
Yes, sir.
See, because Mr. Matt knows that I once wrote a book or started to write a book called God is a Salami Sandwich. And I thought it was so irreverent that I didn't dare finish it. God said, if you can't be irreverent about me, then what's the point of knowing me?
As though God is somebody you have to approach who has airs on all of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So I talk now to God as if she were my best friend. And he turns out that he is, and the best friend I ever had in my life.
As humans, for survival and for like keeping our mind straight, like we like to put things in buckets and label them. And when something, sometimes even like God or any kind of like sense of mystical things, we put it in a bucket. And we're like, I mean, that's a little woo-woo for me. Or, you know, I'm not a religious person. But, I mean, hopefully our audience, as you're listening to this conversation, and you're hearing the most human part of our existence, our existential questions that we all have. I kind of want to break the stigma as somebody who came from that world of like everything that wasn't exactly what we believe is the occult, is, you know, too much mysticism and bad. But this idea of common sentience, like you want to talk a little bit about that book series and why it's important that it's part of that series specifically?
Well, I'm happy that it is. I'm not sure how important it is to be part of that series, but I'm glad that it is. And the publisher wrote books, or I should say published books by other writers who talked about this whole experience of common sentience that flows through all of life. That animals can communicate with us, and they often do. You know, anyone who's looked into the eyes of a dog that you're totally in love with knows that the dog is aware what you're thinking and that you're totally in love with him. And the dog will communicate that he or she is totally in love with you as well. So the point being that all of life is a process through which wisdom and clarity is communicated to us. Sometimes just by visions, by thoughts, by experiences, as I mentioned earlier, even just a fragrance in the air that might remind us of something. Walking down the street and for no apparent reason, smelling the fragrance of a gardenia and then going home and realizing, you know, I need to call my mom. Gardenia was her signature fragrance, her signature perfume. I'm being invited to call mom. Why would I be smelling that fragrance just walking down the street? So you call your mother and you wind up having the most important conversation you've had with her in a long time. And as it turns out, she leaves the planet a few weeks later. And it winds up being the last conversation you had with her. So there's a sense of the common sentience of life that is sending us messages to life, through life, about life, continuously. Stay awake. Don't let yourself be asleep at the wheel. Stay awake.
And if you're watching or listening to this and you go, well, he described God as his best friend, that might not be what you see God as a quick anecdote. My mom called me about a year ago, and I love my mom. She tries to the best of her ability to meet me where I'm at. I think I have a little bit more flexibility in that. But she went on and tried to explain to me what God was. And I said, you know, the minute you start to try to tell somebody what or who God is, I think it's fraught with peril because it might be different for you than me. And she said, no, because God is the Father. He is Abba. He is these things. And I said, is it possible that God is a father to you because you never had a father? You've needed and wanted a male, masculine role model in your life for so long, and that God is filling that role for you, or at least that's how you're perceiving it. And I said, because I don't see God as a dad. I have a great dad. I see God as a mentor because I crave mentorship and connection and somebody who can talk to me, not just philosophical and emotional, but also very logistical and even like, you know, career moves and things like that. So, and you talk about God as a best friend. It can be all those things. It can be something different. But my, and Neil, you can disagree if you do, but my take on that is God's going to talk to you in the way that you are the most receptive.
Well, not only do I totally agree with you, that's precisely what God said to me in my conversations with God, because, you know, he was using humor that I would not expect God to use. She was saying things that seemed to contradict or violate everything I was ever told, you know, as a person in my life about life itself and about God. All these things were happening. And so I asked God, you know, what's going on? You know, how is this possible? How could you be talking to me like this? How could you even be using this particular language? How could you have told me a joke like that? And God said to me, I will speak to you and I will appear in your life in the way that I think that you will most readily and most easily and most immediately recognize me. That is to recognize, to know again, to recognize me. So, of course, I will show up in your life in the way that you will most easily and quickly recognize who I am and remember me. So, yes, that's the message I agree with. I totally agree with what you just said, and that's the message that I was given as well. God speaks to all of us, and it shows up in our lives in ways that we find ultimately undeniable.
And there's just such a comfort in that, because it means there are no errors. We don't have to be in this place of sacred holiness. It is in our in the bathroom, right? In the shower. It's in our lives, in the voice that we most recognize. And it's almost like a long lost friend who you get to connect with when it's been too long. And they do like that. And again, I can only speak for myself, but that is something that I've experienced. And I think the hardest thing was me getting over the hump of trying to assume God was something different than what, of course, God would naturally be to me.
I hear you. I'm glad, really glad, that you've had that experience. And I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk about this little book that we produce called God Talk, which attempts to share with other people how everyone can have that experience, how we can get past our cultural bias. You know, there's a cultural bias on the planet against having a conversation with God. In fact, many of the world's religions, not a few, but many of the world's religions actually would say that if you claim that God is talking directly to you, it's one thing to say you talk to God. Religions will say, well, of course you should be. We call it prayer.
Right.
So you should be talking to God. But if you claim that, no, you don't understand, God is talking back to me, we have a two-way conversation going, most religions will call that blasphemy, heresy, apostasy. So we have to actually have the courage to be willing to stand up against our own cultural's bias, our own culture's bias against the idea that we can have a two-way communication with the divine. So that it takes, not a small amount of courage to go there. But we talk about that a lot in the book, God Talk, and how you can develop that willingness to experience what most people would deny is even possible. And there are those people who say, okay, fair enough, God does talk to human beings, but only a few. I mean, you got to be the Pope.
Chosen ones, right?
Yeah.
My middle name is the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yeah.
Right. My middle name is the namesake of King David. I'm David is my middle name. And I just remember hearing that so much. And I'm like, why is he so special? I just remember thinking that my whole life. Who's he?
So we think that if you're the chief ulama or the head rabbi or somebody who deserves to be spoken to by God, then maybe God will reveal itself to you. But not if you're, the first baseman for the New York Yankees. I mean, come on.
Of course not.
So God doesn't talk to everyday average people. And and that's the sad part about it. You know, I was doing the Today Show a few years ago, Matt, another Matt, in this case, Matt Lauer, was interviewing me. And Matt said to me at the end of the interview, Neil, you claim to have talked to God. What's God's most important message to the world? He said, could you put it into just a couple of paragraphs? We have only 30 seconds. I thought, in my mind, I thought, you son of a gun. You've done enough interviews to know better than to wait until the last 30 seconds to ask me the most important question facing humankind in the history of humanity. Come on. So I knew he did it deliberately. But I came up with immediately the answer came to me. And I looked at Matt. I said, Matt, I can answer your question. I don't need 30 seconds. I don't even need two paragraphs. I can give it to you in 5 words. So Matt Lauer looks at the camera, a little bit of just a trace of cynicism. Ladies and gentlemen, the man who claims to be talking to God, here's God's message to the world in 5 words. Deal? And I looked at the camera and I said, you've got me all wrong. Matt Lauer didn't know where to go with that. It'd been a long time since anybody stumped this long-time talk show host, but he didn't know where to go with it. He thought surely I was going to say something like love everybody or be kind to your, you know, whatever, some platitude. No, you've got me all wrong was not the message he expected to hear. So I had, and he had like 20 seconds left to go before the commercial break. So, and I knew it because I had been in broadcasting most of my life. I understood what was going on. So I said, I thought I'd fill the last 20 seconds. I said, Matt, let me help you out with something. If I'm wrong about that, then our conversation is over. But if I'm right about the fact that we've got God all wrong, the conversation has just begun.
Ooh, what a great cliffhanger. Well, before I throw to you for any final thoughts you want to share, I have a two-part final question. Will you ever write the book, God is a Salami Sandwich? And
no.
Can I pitch you an idea then for it? Because I just feel like it's a Neil Donald Walsh meets David Sedaris, and you got, and it comes together of musings, comical essays, because I think people forget that, I mean, if we're made in the image of God, he has the best sense of humor, he or she, or God, as in it, whatever, has the best sense of humor of all time. The irreverence of that, Neil, I feel like there's a missed opportunity there. The second you said the name of that title in your book, I go, man, that needs to exist.
Well, I'm probably not going to write any more books, but I will answer the question that I thought you were going to ask me in our last 60 seconds, which is, the message that impacted your life the most?
I was going to get to that, of course.
The message that impacted my life the most was when I asked God, really, frankly, begged God, just tell me what I don't understand. Clearly, there's something here that I don't fully understand. The understanding of which would change everything. What is it? And God said, Neil, sweetheart, your life is not about you. You think your life is about you. Your life is about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. But when you understand that, when you live into that, you will experience a larger truth. You'll become aware of a universal understanding that in the cosmic sense, your life is about you for an elegant reason. There's only one of us in the room.
Beautifully said. Of course. Thank you so much for this. Hopefully, we help spread the word and get more people to start having these conversations and to learn some of these things for themselves. Is there a one-stop shop people can go to find all the Neil Donald Walsh things in their life that they are missing?
Sure. They can just go to cwgconnect.com. CWG, of course, stands for Conversations with God. So if you want to stay connected with the energetic, just go to cwgconnect.com.
Thank you for doing what you do, because actually you are a huge inspiration to me. And in order to get some of these things out of the way, it was symbiotic the way I was reading God Talk. I would do something and then the next chapter was like, you should journal. And I had just journaled for the first time the night before in years. So I knew, you say at the beginning, this book came to you at the specific time for a reason. And it's not just coincidence. And I'm like, well, holy shit. Yeah, I would have told you that if you didn't write it in there. That was exactly what happened.
Thank you, my friend, for giving me a chance to share this time with you. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Blessed be.
Take care.
Bye for now.
We just went there. Now you can go to thegoingtherepodcast.com for links to all the podcast platforms, our socials, and of course, YouTube. While you're at it, give us a rating, share with a friend, and subscribe.
This podcast is made possible by its hosts and Frame One Media in association with Joe Calley and Bobby Thomas.